steps, this left foot drags behind my right. I keep walking from daybreak till falling night. Days turn into weeks and years turn into lifetimes. Just keep walking like I've been walking for a thousand years. Walk away in emptiness, walk away in sorrow. Walk away from yesterday, walk away tomorrow. Walking to escape, or escape from your affliction. You'll be walking in a great circle, in a circle of addiction. And did you ever wonder what you've been carrying since the world was
broadcasting before and probably after the rapture? It's the Drew Marshall Show.
Walk away in emptiness, walk away in sorrow. Walk away from yesterday, walk away tomorrow. Walk away in anger, walk away in pain. Walk away from life itself, walk into the
It's time for Drew's Pilgrimage Preparation. What a nifty little title we put in there. This October, right after my first grandchild is born, I will be heading out on the Camino de Santiago. For well over 1,000 years, millions of pilgrims have walked the Way of St. James, the most popular route being the almost 800 kilometers beginning in France over the Pyrenees Mountains across northern Spain to the Atlantic. Well, you go to the cathedral and you go to the Atlantic to have a bath. You know, after 2 months, you want to have a bath. And just to make things interesting, I'm going to do the whole thing in a vow of silence. Along the way, I'll be writing about my experiences interacting with other pilgrims without speaking and posting on the Drew Marshall Show Facebook page. The plan is to finish the Camino on my 50th birthday on November 30th. So every Saturday in July, which is the last month of season 13, I will be interviewing a variety of Camino gurus in order to prepare for my upcoming bucket list experience. Today's Camino gurus: Dr. George Greenia. He is founder of the Institute for Pilgrimage Studies, a professor emeritus of Hispanic Studies, and honorary Knight of Spain. Tim, I think that's a first for us. I don't think we've ever had a Knight of Spain on the show before.
I don't think we've had a Knight, period.
Yes, we have.
Who?
Sir Ted Robinson.
Oh, yeah, the education dude.
Yes. Thank you very much. So don't even with me. You know what I mean? I don't know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's thank goodness you're going on this Camino trail to get yourself put together.
Dr. Arthur Boris, he's the author of The Way is Made by Walking, a pilgrimage along the Camino de Santiago. He was also associate professor and R.J. Bernardo family chair of leadership at Tyndale University College and Seminary. Let's see if they're both on the line. Dr. Greenia, are you there, sir?
I am.
Thank you for joining us. May I call you George?
Sure, please.
And Dr. Arthur Boris. By the way, I already know I can call you Arthur, right, Arthur?
That's right. I'm glad to be here.
We have King Arthur and the Knight of Spain on the show at the same time. And now, have you two gentlemen spoken to each other before? Arthur?
We've met a few times along the way, and we've even run into each other at the cathedral in Santiago.
Isn't that bizarre? So you accidentally ran into each other, or did you plan a meeting out there?
It wasn't planned. I was there with a group. I'd taken a group there, and I saw George walk by, so I went over and talked to him.
Interesting. And George, you know, you're such a rock star, you don't even remember Arthur, do you? You don't care about us Canadians.
Are you kidding? Arthur has written one of the best books in existence about the Camino de Santiago. He's one of the clearest voices and the kindest guides. for walkers on the Camino de Santiago. So it's a great honor to share a program with him.
Wow. You need to get that in writing, Arthur. That's a killer endorsement right there.
I know, because George is the senior statesman of pilgrims.
All right. Are we finished having the big love fest here? This is getting awkward.
Mm-hmm. Talk about me. No one called in earlier.
Tim, you are the biggest friend of mine.
And we're going by weight.
Oh, listen. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Both of you have so much to teach me about what I'm in for. And I'm taking these interviews much the same way that I'm taking the Camino. There's so much to read and research and study and look into, et cetera, but I'm not sure I want to do that. George, would you suggest that someone research and study and try to get as much information as they can before they go, or should they go blindly?
No, I think you should do some homework so that you don't walk into some sort of fantasy experience. I've seen too many people go to the Camino de Santiago hoping for an absolute medieval experience, and what they're trying to do is some sort of spiritual Game of Thrones, I'm afraid. It doesn't work like that quite.
So what I hear you saying is someone is going to die, right? Got it.
Well, in the Middle Ages, and that's where I'm really the expert, I guess, in the Middle Ages, the most common feature on the Camino de Santiago, after churches and chapels and monasteries, were cemeteries. And it's, we like to say in the Middle Ages that the rich had doctors and the poor had pilgrimage. So it was a pretty grim trail of walkers that you were joining. Nowadays, the walkers tend to be pretty hardy and sometimes downright buff. And the biggest danger that ordinary walkers like me fall into is compare despair. You look at the other folks and you know you're not that strong. The pilgrimage is done at your own pace.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that you can learn in advance, that it's not a race. It's a walk of faith.
George, so you've trekked the thing over 4,000 miles. Is that a true story?
Yeah, it is. I've been on the pilgrimage trails in Spain, I guess 12 times now, for something over 4,000 miles, half on bicycle, half on foot. And each time is different, I have to tell you. Most of the time I go with my students from the College of William and Mary, and reliving the pilgrimage through their young eyes is always a joy and a wonder every time I go.
I'm just reading some of your bio here, and there's a part I'd like to stop and just ask you a couple of questions. George Greeney did his undergraduate at Marquette University and PhD at the University of Michigan. Go Wolverines. He is a specialist in languages, literatures, and linguistics of medieval Spain and teaches courses on Spanish language, epic and nationalism, Hispanic folktales, and love and prostitution in medieval Spain. Guess where I'd like to stop?
Probably with the last one.
Yeah. Can you just explain that a little further, and how many kids do you have sign up to that course?
Well, happy to say it sort of flash fills as soon as it's announced. Everyone wants to take that course. But I can give you the pilgrimage tie-in. It's interesting that the early church fathers pretty much disapproved of pilgrimage for Christians in the West. And that's because one of the reasons is that when you are far from home and your legitimate partner, boy, what happens on the Camino stays on the Camino. And there were whole camps of prostitutes that lined the trail in the Middle Ages and serviced pilgrims who were falling into sin along the way. So there was actually plenty of sex in the Middle Ages on the pilgrimage trail, and it was one of the principal dangers or temptations to avoid. It was pretty much there all the time. Nowadays, it's a pretty chaste affair because people are sharing with you these wonderful personal stories, and they're just not in circumstances where you're going to hit on someone after they tell you about, say, the death of a partner, the loss of a job, cancer having gone into remission. These are all stories that you hear on the trail, on the pilgrim trail in the Camino. And they're wonderful stories that really lift you out of some of the temptations you find on the internet, say.
Hmm. So what I hear you saying is there will not be brothels along the Camino.
If you look for them, Drew, you can probably find them, but I don't know where to look, and that seems to be okay.
That's funny. All right, Arthur, you have been on the Camino how many times?
Three times.
And I asked someone the other day if it's polite to ask people while they're on the Camino why they're on the Camino. And this person said, no, it's not polite to ask that. If you get talking to them and you share space and time with them, then okay, maybe it'll come out and maybe you can ask around it. But to just, you know, walk by somebody and say, hey, why are you doing this? Not a cool thing. Would you say that? Would you agree with that, Arthur?
Well, I'm not sure it would be the first question out of my mouth, but it is something people talk about quite a bit and quite soon, I find. So when you meet up with people beside a fountain and you start sharing snacks or looking after each other's blisters or talk about the best route to the next destination, people quickly ask, well, where did you start today and where did you start the Camino? And it doesn't take long before people start talking about why they're on the Camino at all.
Arthur, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, mm-hmm. you know, what is the land between seeing this as some altruistic, you know, road to Damascus kind of thing, and just seeing it as a stretch of land that a lot of people have walked on? Trying to just sniff around the land in between, you know, I really hope that something's going to happen out here. I really hope that the Lord will speak with me. I really hope that I'll have this epiphany or that whatever. And then the other part of me just sort of says, it's a trail a lot of people have taken. It's going to be good food, good wine, and good scenery. Next.
Well, all of the above really are true, Drew. But I guess I would make two observations. And one is, it's my experience that whenever we make space for God, whenever we make space and take time and clear out and simplify our lives, whenever we pay attention to God, God does speak to us. I think God speaks to us always and everywhere, but most of the time we're so distracted and overwhelmed, it's hard for us to notice or to pay attention. So we need those times in our life where we step aside and do that. So whether that's daily prayer or going to church or worship or going on retreat, those are all opportunities to do that. And the Camino functions that way for people as well. The other huge advantage of doing this on the Camino is that you run into it's not only that people have walked it ahead of time, although I think that's very important, but you also run into all kinds of other people who are clearing space in their lives, looking for some kind of simplicity and solitude and are engaging on something with deep intentionality. Most of the people I met didn't call themselves Christian. They didn't even call themselves religious. But they had some kind of dissatisfaction with the way they were leading their lives, and this was a time of transition, reflection, mourning, the kinds of motivations that George already mentioned. But it's also a clearing of space where things can happen. And so there is power to doing this kind of reflection in the company and presence of other people who are similarly motivated. Mm-hmm. And what I found was that conversations on the Camino often went very deep, very quickly. So people talked about important things quite soon. And I found that wonderful.
George, you resonate with what Arthur's saying?
Oh, Arthur's hit it on the nail on the head. He said it beautifully. But yeah, people go deep and quickly. Mm-hmm. I like to say that the folks that you meet on the trail are everywhere from industrial strength Catholics to mainline denominations to bearers of aromas, crystals, and grudges against the former churches.
Right.
There's very insistent church growers and various insistent church avoiders, but they're all questing on some level. And the conversations that they're willing to have with anybody, their willingness to eavesdrop sort of politely on conversations of faith, and eventually join in, is something that both takes you by surprise and gives you, just a real surge of happiness. There was the mother of one of my students who, before the trip, called me up and begged me to take him because this was a kid who was a little bit lost, and the pilgrimage is transformative, she said, and he really needs a transformation. And I had to tell her as kindly as I could, you know, that transformation is not a deliverable. I can't guarantee it's going to happen, but if he's open to it, things do happen for you. And that's part of the wonder of pilgrimage, that things happen for you when you open yourself up for them.
Okay, Arthur, kind of going off what both you guys are saying is, this is what I hear. I hear you both saying if you're open to God moving in your life, then God will move in your life. So that then presupposes that you don't need to go out on a pilgrimage to do that. Is there something special about that land, that walk, that journey that God seems to move in interesting, more interesting ways on the Camino rather than, you know, Joe factory worker putting tops on bottles 24 hours a day?
You can answer that. You can say both yes and no answer to your question.
Yeah.
Drew, the kinds of things that happen on the Camino can happen anywhere, and they can happen with anybody who lives their life in a disciplined and intentional way and tries to pay attention to God. So they can happen in the workplace, they can happen at the monastery, they can happen going to church, they can happen going for a walk in the woods. So you don't have to go on the Camino to have these things. That's true. And there's no argument there. And in fact, if you argued that the only real and meaningful thing can happen on the Camino, then that cheapens the rest of life, I think. So I hesitate to say that. Now, having said that, I think there's also a case to be made that there is a deep power in going to places where people have had experiences of encountering God. So Celtic Christians used to talk about thin places, you know, places where the dividing line between heaven and earth feels more thin than usual. It's easy to cross that boundary. And so going on the Camino where many people have had that kind of experience, where there are folks who have been hosts along the Camino, where there's a history of faithful people being before, and where there are groups of people walking the Camino, also makes those rich experiences more accessible and more readily available. And there's a comfort and a consolation and a reinforcement in doing it in that way.
Man, George, this guy's pretty good, eh?
Boy, I told you he was terrific.
George, on the phone again, folks, with Dr. George Greenia and Dr. Arthur Boers. And George, what's Martin Sheen like? Hey, come on, what's he like?
Martin and Emilio are both really great guys. I was impressed because in public, Emilio calls his father Martin as a professional courtesy. But in private, he calls him Pops. And the two of them have such an honest and untroubled father-son relationship. It's just natural affection between the two. So I got to say, two of the nicest guys I ever had dinner with, really fine people.
What did you have for dinner? What did they order? I'm kidding.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was after a reception where none of us got anything to eat for over 3 hours. We just talked to people and what, there were 400 people there.
Right.
And so the catering staff sent a whole tray of food up to our apartment, our hotel room, and we sat down and munched on salads and whatnot and just told stories about the Camino. And that's what you bring back, stories that you've heard from other people on the Camino. Enriching your life with those stories that makes the pilgrimage such a great experience.
And, of course, the reason I brought all of this up is because, at least for those of us in the West who have seen this movie called The Way by Emilio Estevez, which, of course, stars his father, Martin Sheen, and a little bit of himself as well, it is a very interesting, I wouldn't call it a dynamic movie, but it's a very interesting movie. And, of course, the way that parallels The Wizard of Oz is quite interesting. I'll leave it at that because I don't want to spoil it for you, but you'll see what I mean when you see the movie The Way. But, George, you had something to do with those guys and The Way?
Yes. Twice in Washington, D.C., we were able to put together major screening events for them, including with the Embassy of Spain in Washington, D.C. And they were terrific events, and Martin and Emilio were just so warm and welcoming to everybody. It means a lot to them because they come from a Spanish family. The Estevez is the original family name. They talk about that movie as their love letter and thank you to Spain. Hmm. Because it's a family heritage thing. And actually, it's wonderful because when they were filming the and scouting locations and filming the movie, Emilio's son met his future wife on the Camino, and they fell in love and started dating, and I believe he's living in Spain with her now. Hmm. So it,
a family story that's come full circle back to Spain.
Now that's neat.
So it means a lot to them.
Next week on our show, we will have the lady who walks the Camino barefoot, Sue. What's her last name again?
Kenny.
Sue Kenny, that's right. So she'll be here in studio. And then the following week, we'll have Monet, and I can't remember her husband's name, but speaking of love stories, they met on the Camino and got married. And so, yeah, we'll bring the ooey-gooey-ness to the Camino in a couple of weeks on the Drew Marshall Show. George, let's go to you as far as story is concerned. Please share with us one of your best Camino stories.
All right, I'll tell you one of the most touching stories that I heard. And it was from a woman from the United States, as it happened, who had accompanied her son through teenage years of emotional upset and doubt and disruption until in his early 20s he actually committed suicide. And she went on the Camino to get out of that house, away from his room, apart from the relatives, and finally tell herself persuasively that it wasn't her fault. And that happened for her on the Camino. So there's stories like that that you hear from people who are actually looking for people that they can trust to share it with. And if you're a pilgrim, you find yourself the recipient of these powerful, deep, enriching stories that people trust you with simply because you're walking with them along the trail. And I've heard dozens of stories of that, both light and dark. That is to say, desperate memories and very happy circumstances where things have turned out. The cancer has gone into remission, and they can walk. People walk in memory of others. They were foolish in the 80s and did not get HIV. And they're walking for those friends, former lovers, who did die of AIDS. And they're walking in their memory and to sanctify that memory for them. So when you hear these types of stories on a daily basis, it really deepens, resonates, enriches your life. And you find yourself traveling with a better class of tourists, as it were, even people who say that they're only tourists. And that's possible. It's easy to be a tourist with never being a pilgrim. It's almost impossible to be a pilgrim and never be a tourist. And that's okay. You forgive yourself for that. But when you're a pilgrim, your story matters, too. And, Drew, when you go on pilgrimage, people, I love your vow of silence during your pilgrimage, but people will be hungering for your story. And I hope you'll take an opportunity now and then to share your story with others, because it's your big gift to them, I think.
Yeah, I've been challenged more than once on that side of things. I'm still kind of processing how I'll communicate and what will be the, you know, what will the interactions look like. But all right, Arthur, you share with us maybe one or two stories.
Okay, one story is quite a simple story, but one evening I stayed in a room with about 12 other pilgrims, and there was a couple in the room, and all that I knew about them was that they were from Germany, and I knew their first names, and all that they knew about me was that I lived in Indiana. That was the whole thing, and we shared a room that night. We didn't really converse, and the next day I walked to the next small town, got there about 1 o'clock and cleaned up as usual, found some food, had a nap, went for a walk. And then around the corner, I came and I saw Marcus and Susanna, the couple who had been in the room the night before. They were having coffee at a outside of a cafe in the street, and I asked if I could join them. And Camino rules kind of are you can join almost anybody anytime, and they welcomed me at the table. And I didn't say much. They knew, as I said, my name was Arthur and that I lived in Indiana at the time. And within 10 minutes, Marcus told me that he was not a Christian, but he was carrying a Bible with him. He's reading it every day. He went into every church that was open, every service that was offered, and he was reading his Bible. He didn't understand much, and he was reading something called the Sermon on the Mount. And did I happen to know anything about the Sermon on the Mount? And what he didn't know, he didn't know that not only was I a Christian, but I'm a minister. And Sermon on the Mount happens to be one of my favorite parts of the Bible. So we talked about the Sermon on the Mount for a while. And then we talked for 3 more hours straight. And then we went and got groceries, and he insisted on cooking supper for the 3 of us. And then we talked the whole evening away again. And for me, this was just such a great example of the kind of conversations that happen on the Camino. Yeah. I was really heartened by it. And I was really challenged by it, too, in a good way, and that is that much of my life I've spent, you know, in church institutions. I went to Christian schools. I went to seminary. I was a pastor. I taught at seminaries or pastored in congregations. So I'm always hanging around with Christians, and I hadn't spent a lot of time in my life meeting, engaging, listening to people who might call them spiritual but not religious. And I was so impressed by Marcus's integrity, his desire to live a life of virtue, and his seeking. It really challenged me to take more seriously the seeking and searching that's going on in our culture, and not just pay attention to all the Christians who hang out in church kinds of institutions with me.
Right, right. Arthur, listen, we've got a lot of listeners I know who are just wanting to ask you this question, so on their behalf, I will ask this question for you. Did you get them saved? Did you lead them to the Lord Jesus Christ as their personal Lord? Did you get them washed in the blood? Did you baptize? Did you give them a Jack Chick track? Did you save them?
I left him to the Lord.
There we go. Well done. That was for all of you Baptist homeschoolers out there. I had to ask that question. George, what is an honorary Knight of Spain?
Well, it was very generous on behalf of the Spanish government, and I was nominated to be knighted by the ambassador of Spain to the United States. It's a cultural award rather than a certainly military thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a gesture of gratitude for the work that I've done on Spanish culture and literature, and also pilgrimage studies specifically. Pilgrimage has become, Spain's gift to the world. And there's about 300,000 people who do some stretch of the Camino de Santiago every year. Mm. And it's a way for getting to know the intimate historical Spain and offering hospitality to the world. So Spain has done a wonderful job of welcoming people to their territory, to their lands. It actually develops the interior. It favors mom-and-pop operations and not corporate chains. It's not just beaches and paellas. It's really history, culture, communication. People talk to each other on the Camino. It's a really beautiful meeting point. And we've met people from not just Spain and Canada and the United States, but New Zealand and Australia and South Africa and Germany and Poland. I met a couple Israeli kids, teenagers, who wanted to eavesdrop on Christian pilgrimage. They see plenty of pilgrimage to Jerusalem where they live, but to walk a Christian pilgrimage with Christians was something they thought would broaden them. And it's actually, for the college students that I take, it's the Jewish kids, the Muslim kids, willing to go on pilgrimage, who offer actually the best questions to the rest of us. I'm Catholic myself. And when the Muslim kids ask me, so why do you do that? You have to come up with fresh and reasonable answers. And it really clarifies your own understanding about what's habit and what's a real commitment and expression of faith. It's a great environment to learn about what you believe yourself.
George, I think really what listeners want to know is, did you get a sword? Did you get something? Did you get anything for being an honorary Knight of Spain?
The truth is, I got a beautiful medal and cross to wear, and I got to say, it's one big honking piece of jewelry.
Nice.
It's about 3 inches tall. It's gold and enamel on both sides. Formal ceremony at the residence of the ambassador of Spain.
Oh, beautiful.
And it was a lot of fun, actually.
That's cool. How can I get one of those?
You know, I don't know, but we stood around looking at it, and I was saying, I think I'll wear it to the post office. I think I'll wear it to class. I don't wear it to any of those places.
No, I can understand. Folks, again, we are on the phone with Dr. George Greenia. He's founder of the Institute for Pilgrimage Studies, Professor Emeritus of Hispanic Studies, and Honorary Knight of Spain, as we've just been chatting about. And also on the phone with us is Dr. Arthur Bors. He is author of The Way is Made by Walking, a pilgrimage along the Camino de Santiago, fully endorsed by Dr. George Greenia, by the way. Dr. Bors is also associate professor and R.J. Bernardo Family Chair of Leadership at Tyndale University College and Seminary. Gentlemen, as I'm just looking at the clock here, I need to ask you about the supernatural. Because every time I ask people, let me compare this with something I did a few years ago. When I came out publicly about my doubts as to whether there really is a God or not, I did a little thing on my show called Droogle. Drew's Search for God. And I interviewed a variety of people and asked them to sort of give me reasons why they think that God is real. And as I listened to those again recently, I realized that in my estimation, humbly, oh so humbly, I thought their reasons sucked. And it was kind of like, you know, I prayed for a parking spot and there it was kind of thing. Or I just really felt it in my bones kind of thing. And as I contrast that with the stories you guys gave about the Camino, what I hear about stories in the Camino is how people's interaction with other people have been restorative and healing interactions. But what about interactions with God? Can either of you come to the table with an interaction, a tangible encounter with God story? Arthur, anything?
The first thing I would say is that one of the primary ways that I experience God actually is through other people.
Yeah.
And so I did have my faith reinforced on the Camino because of my encounter with so many gracious people who wanted to live lives that were lives of integrity and wanted to make the world a better place and were so hospitable and considerate of one another. Hmm. So that did deeply reinforce my faith. And these were not necessarily people who called themselves Christians. Most of them would not have called themselves Christians. So for me, that was very, very powerful.
But wouldn't that just restore your faith in humanity, not in God? I guess because you're a Christian, you transfer that to God.
Well, humans are the closest that we come in touch with God, and humans are created by God and created in an image of God. So for me, the two are bound up.
Hmm. Right.
But I also, you know, I also spent a lot of time in prayer and praying about my life, praying through my life, reflecting on my life. I thought my first plan actually was to, every day I was going to prayerfully review a year of my life. And on the first day, I tried to review the first year of my life, and that didn't take very long because I couldn't remember much about my first year. And so then I decided instead to review periods of my life. So then I reviewed, you know, preschool years and kindergarten and grade school and all that kind of stuff. And I spent probably, you know, up to an hour a day doing that. And then later on, after the walking was finished, to write about that in my journal. And I came away with a deep sense that throughout my life, God had been present. God had cared for me. God had provided for me in quite amazing ways. And that struck me because not everything that I reviewed in my life was positive or necessarily good. A lot of people in my family and my wife's family died young, so there are sorrows and there are griefs. I was aware of, I was still remembering, betrayals of people who are important to me, and I also remembered my own failures. And so, but as I reviewed my life, I saw that God had been at work in and through all of that, and that was very consoling. And that was also literally played out on the Camino, that I saw God at work in the Camino in circumstances that happened, in challenges that happened. Even when I went to emergency room in the hospital because my blisters were so bad, I understood that God was at work. And even when things went awry, I could see God's providence. So I saw it both in the Camino itself, but also as I reflected on my own life.
Okay, I'm sorry, I got a little sidetracked with you going to the emergency room with blisters. Can we just talk about that for a second? That's not going to happen to me, right?
No, it's not going to happen to you because you're going to have correctly sized boots that you break in ahead of time, and you're going to practice your walking daily before you go.
Okay.
And you're only going to use the boots when you walk up and down mountain slopes, and other than that, you're going to use either good walking shoes or good walking sandals.
That's great advice. You scared me, man. I don't do blisters.
I saw you frantically writing down that list there,
Jay. Well, the last few times I went, I didn't have blisters, and neither did any of the people that I took.
Good, so good. Okay. Thank you. Oh, man, I've got to relax after that. George, my same sort of, I guess, it almost sounded like a bit of a spiritually arrogant challenge, but do you understand what I'm talking about when I say, you know, I'm interested in tangible encounters with the Almighty. A, do you think they're reality? And B, if they can't happen on the Camino, geez, where can they happen?
Well, Drew, what we're all looking for is transcendence. And what we get from our usual religious practices are practices. Hmm. The thing is, with practice, you know, transcendence, when it comes, is an accident. You can't, it's not delivered on demand. Hmm. But with practice, you can become accident-prone. And that's the great thing about the Camino. You practice with your body itself. And then the transcendence may indeed come. There used to be a great tension in the religious life between the active and the contemplative life. And you sort of get that in your daily cycle as a pilgrimage, as a pilgrim. By day, it's quiet, solitude, and reflection. Mm-hmm. And by night, it's companionship. And by day, you're thinking about your own story. And then by night, you hear other people's stories. And in that sort of flow of what you share and reveal, precisely because of the anonymity allows more disclosures than would happen anywhere else, you do become inspired. That practice of disclosure, of honesty, of transparency, it does deliver something of a godly experience, and I treasure that. And it's not bound up to any one tradition either. I've met Buddhists on the pilgrimage trail, Catholics, Jews, Muslims, and they all share their stories and share their insights, and they become for each other pathways to God. So yeah, I've experienced God on the pilgrimage trail.
But again, like Arthur, it's through humans, correct?
Well, I'm grateful that God approaches me through other humans. It makes me more respectful of them.
Yeah, I hearken back to the Ten Commandments where I think they call it the Bible, where Moses was going up to meet God in the whole burning bush thing, and remove your sandals, this is holy ground, I cannot look in his face. I mean, really, maybe God is just saving us from bursting into some kind of flame ball if he did reveal himself to us. You know, who knows? Maybe what I'm asking is childish and immature. You'd think after 30-plus years of calling myself a Christian, I would grasp the concept that God is hidden. Somebody sent me a text the other day that said something like, you know, God gives you enough stuff to sort of hang in there, but never doesn't reveal enough about himself that you can sort of go, aha, you know? There's a guy named Dr. Daniel Taylor, I've had on the show. He wrote a book called The Myth of Certainty, and, you know, he writes a lot about the fact that God always leaves just as we get there.
That's true enough. And Friedrich Nietzsche once wrote that he could only believe in a God who can dance. Well, I could only believe in a God who could surprise me. And God continually surprises me. If I'm totally bored, if it just meets my expectations, then I know it's not God. Hmm. It's being willing to be surprised by God.
Yes, yeah.
To be surprised by grace that gives me more assurance that I am opening myself up to the unexpected and maybe to God.
Really well said. Speaking of bored, Dr. Arthur Boer on the show with us. As a professor, that's just a horrible name to have, is it not? Does your professor bore you? Come on, how many times have you heard that?
It's pronounced Boers.
Yes.
And it's a Dutch word meaning farmer, but it's true. Boer and Boer are not the... not necessarily the first words in the English language that you would choose for a last name. not to mention that, of course, it gets associated with the Boers of South Africa and their apartheid policy.
Yeah, that's never a good connection there either.
Right.
If you wanted to tease people into going out and getting your book, The Way is Made by Walking, a pilgrimage along the Camino de Santiago, what's the setup? How do you hook them in?
I always refer them to George and ask him to give an endorsement.
Happily.
Well said.
This is a book that I've assigned to people to read. It's the first book that I recommend when people approach me and ask about spirituality, and I ask them to read Arthur's book. It's really a classic in the field now.
Wow, you're a classic in the field, Dr. Arthur Boer.
Well, I guess I have to settle for that since I'm not a knight.
No, not everybody can be a knight, man.
There you go.
Gentlemen, I have so many more questions for you, but unfortunately it is a radio show and we've got to move on to other things. But I want to thank both of you for being willing to come on the show. I sent out a call for Camino Gurus and both of your names came up multiple times by people. And I just, I know it's an honor to have both you on at the same time. So thank you very, very much. And I look forward to further communication with both of you, if you will allow me.
It's a pleasure, Drew.
Yeah, pleasure, Drew. And good luck in your Camino. I know it'll be a wonderful experience.
I hope so. I hope so. Although I did spend a month in Israel right at the start of my my Dark Night of the Soul stuff, and people said, well you're going to meet, God's going to do great things. God's, you know that line, God's going to do great things. Man, the only thing really that brought tears to my eye were these jalapenos when I was having this Palestinian food. That was about it. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I'm trying. I'm trying. Dr. George Greene.
Your first grandchild is born.
Well, I know. Seriously, if that's not going to crack me open, nothing will. Dr. George Greene and Dr. Arthur Boers, thank you, gentlemen, both so very much.
You're welcome. And thank you, Drew.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, man. My questions are endless. Can you imagine living with someone like me? What a pain. It's question after question after question.
I barely can handle you once a week.